podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, welcome to the award-winning Gutter, the show with more transfer goodness in it than something that's got a lot of transfer goodness in it. And this is a free special edition of the Gutter to give those who have been thus far foolish enough not to subscribe to Tall Player a taste of the Gutter transfer-y goodness we've just been referring to. We're going to do this one, this special, in three parts. It's not a small scale of topic we're addressing today, as you'll all be aware of, and to deep dive into the ramifications around the stuff that's been breaking in the past week and to look ahead as to what the Reds might do about all the shit are John Gibbons, Ian Ryan and Andy Heaton, who's also producing. We're videoing this, aren't we? Oh, you can enjoy us in many dimensions. Okay, we're going to start in part one by talking about the obvious. Jordan Henderson, our captain, Fabinho, our midfield anchor, during our glory years of the last few, are both reportedly on the edge of mega money transfers to the Saudi League. Breaking just before we start recording is that Jordan Henderson has verbally agreed a three-year contract with the Saudi club. Not sure how advanced the Fabinho one is reported to being, but crucially, fees are not agreed with Liverpool in either case. It's reported that a 10 million fee is what the Saudis want to pay for Jordan, and they're prepared to pay about 40 million for Fabinho. Ian Ryan, geez. Where do we start with all this? We seem to have gone from trotting along, adding a couple of midfielders, talking about adding another defensive midfielder, wondering whether Thiago might call it quits and go somewhere like Saudi or Turkey, to losing two stalwarts who still really have plenty to give and certainly would have been targeting around the 30-game mark for next season.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think it's probably throwing Liverpool a little bit of a curveball that maybe two players could potentially leave. And listen, Jürgen will have to have a look at it and think, is it feasible to have such a big overhaul in one window? It feels like a lot. Now, don't get me wrong, I don't think either of the players we're talking about are in their kind of peak years. I mean, Fabinho's only 29, but I think given what we saw for large parts of last season, it's hard to make a really, really strong case that you're going to ever see the very best of him again. That said, I think there were signs towards the end of the season when Trent was operating in that hybrid role and was spending a little bit more time in midfield that all of a sudden you saw Fabinho come back to life a little bit with legs around him. But I do still think it's hard to really understand where his true level is. And listen, Jordan Henderson, obviously, you know, we spoke about him an awful lot on a show yesterday. His best years are behind him, in my opinion. Probably still got lots to offer, or certainly has stuff to offer, but maybe not on a consistent basis. But the manager has to really get his head round. You know, if they are going to let these two players go, what does that mean? Can they get others in? Because they're going to have to do at least two replacements, Rob. You know, they can't be left sleeping on this and give themselves a problem where they can't find other lads to come in. Because I do think this has caught them on the hop a little bit. And do we trust them, as in the owners, maybe, to go out and spend the money? Because I think it's going to need, you know, you can't be talking about just bringing projects in here to cover these two lads. You've got loads and loads of experience. It's going to have to be someone coming in who is ready to rock and roll from day one and go in the team and have impact and make them tick and do all the things that you'd expect from a fairly senior pro. So can they get that kind of player over the line? And I'm sure we'll come on to talk about potential names. And then maybe look at a project type player, someone who's maybe kind of maybe a little bit more raw but can still have, you know, some influence across the course of the season. But yeah, it's certainly interesting times.
Yeah, you do feel, and that this is not a time for Liverpool to be faint-hearted, to be cautious. We've seen different modes of the approach to these situations during the history of the current ownership. I think probably they were at their boldest, you could argue, right back at the beginning in their first transfer window. I'm talking about Fenway Sports Group, our ownership group, when Fernando Torres had to go. It was sprung on us in a certain extent. At the beginning of the window, we were aware Chelsea were going to offer us big dough for him. And he had big shoes that needed replacing. And they acted quite decisively. I mean, it didn't work out for the best in terms of buying Andy Carroll and an inflated fee, but it did with Luis Suarez. But they were bold. As time has gone by, we've seen examples of caution from FSG on this one. there's been a general mantra that it's better to make no purchase than to make the wrong purchase. But in this instance, there's a numbers issue, number of bodies available to play in a Liverpool midfield. There's a quality issue, given that those two players would have been not first choice picks week in, week out, but for about 30 odd games each next season. Liverpool can't be caught dithering here, can they?
No, but uniquely, for quite a while, Liverpool have actually got the whip hand on this. And the much maligned four-year contract that Jordan Henderson was given by Jürgen, you know, a couple of seasons ago, that's actually played into our favour with this. I mean, they can offer Jordan £2 million a week or whatever. The fact of the matter is Liverpool don't have to sell, which means that Liverpool can deal on their own terms. Whether that's saying, well, we need to get someone in first. Like the way Dortmund kind of operate, going, all right, okay, well, this is going to happen, but first we're going to do this, 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 and this. And if this doesn't happen, you can't have them. Simple as, it's not even a question of transfer fee. We will only, because everyone's talking about, oh, it should be 10 million, 20 million, 30 million. It might just simply be a case of going, right, okay, well, here's the figure we're going to deal at, but what are we going to deal at? This, if we can go and sign X. And I think Fabinho's in a similar position. I do wonder with this. I mean, look, but my view on Henderson's, let's call it what it is, hypocrisy on this, I've already spoken about, so I'm going to put that aside because you get dragged down with it. And I think the interview that Josh done with Paul yesterday covered all those bases far more eloquently than I ever could. I just wonder whether both Fabinho, or to a lesser extent Fabinho, but maybe Henderson, has come back in and gone, right, okay, Gaffer, we've got these two players, these two new lads in. What are your thoughts next season? And he hasn't particularly liked the answer. Now, that doesn't mean football's never black and white. You can be disappointed, but at the same time not fall out with the manager, if you know what I mean. And you can have an honest conversation. One thing I think, the outside looking in, I think one thing Jürgen is good at is having honest conversations with players. So maybe he's gone, right, well, listen, you know, we're going to rotate you in and out a little bit more. This is the idea going forward. And Jordan's gone, well, look, you know, I don't like that. Or maybe he's been satisfied with that and then the offer's come in and it's turned his head a little bit. But as far as Liverpool's to answer that actual question, I think Liverpool won't be literally livid on this because they've actually got, as I said, the whip hand. They've got they can't be forced into doing anything they don't want to do, so they can manage things on their terms.
I think, John, the more I think about it, and some of what Andy's saying echoes for me, there are parallels, although there are differences, between the situation when we sold in successive summers Xabi Alonso and Mascherano. Now, though these were players at their peak, we attracted big fees, we did not want to sell categorically. And I think if we were talking 12 months on, this really would be a lot less of a conversation about Jordan Henderson, Fabinho. I think it would be, see you guys, miss you, but go, right? And it isn't actually about each of them as an individual in terms of the team's needs here. It's about the two of them. Now, back in that summer, I don't know what year it was, 2010 or something like that, around the 2009-10-11 period, Liverpool said Xabi Alonso and Mascherano wanted to go at the same time. The club said, only one of you one summer, the other one will have to wait another year. Although I think Jürgen would be more, if you'd asked him a couple of weeks ago, would you be okay with losing one of Fabinho, Thiago or Henderson? He'd go, yep, absolutely fine. In fact, I would quite need them to go for a bit of a spec in the squad. And I want to bring in a youth project like Lavia. Now, I think faced with two important players at once, albeit fading importance, I think that's a test for him and for what his plans going forward. But trying to do a Mascherano Alonso on them and saying one can stay, one can go, I think is my argument, I'll put it to you on this one, is that much harder this time because of the money, the sums at stake. They are just so, let's call them what they are, obscene, so game-changing for any individual. They're talking about Henderson earning, and I know these are just media quota fees, something like 60 or 70 million pounds over the course of 3 years, all but tax-free. It's nuts. It's the sort of stuff that would make a player agitate and stop them being professional if thwarted.
It is a lot of money. And I think, you know, the players that you were talking about before, Alonso, Mascherano, it wouldn't surprise you if actually the contracts that they went on to get, you know, were significantly better. They just wanted the clubs. It's the prestige of playing, you know, for one of the Spanish giants. You know, at that point, Liverpool weren't sort of quite at that level, really. And also, you know, new country and all that. So the moves weren't necessarily, you know, about money, whereas these ones, you know, from Henderson's point of view, you know, I take Andy's points. I don't think it is solely about money. I think he's looking at, you know, what he's been offered at Liverpool in terms of playing time and gone, this isn't really how I see my Liverpool. I don't really want to sort of just see it sort of pete out in that way. But I think, you know, you are right that it is the jump that, you know, make me feel that, will make people feel, or the players feel that, you know, I'm not necessarily going to sit this one out. I think what's also a factor is, I think the players, and I've just done a show with Ollie Kaye, we talked about this, you know, I don't think the players will be sitting around thinking that this money is going to be available forever. You know, I don't think it's this case of, oh, we'll just wait till next year. So even if you can convince someone not to quadruple their wages until next season, which, like you say, Rob, is quite the argument to have for someone whose head's been turned, who knows, that offer might not even be there. You know, next summer they might be going, well actually now our focus is, you know, we've got the big stars in that we want. Now our focus is younger players or even, you know, investing in academies and stuff like that. You know, this might be the summer where, you know, they're going big and they're overspending on these big names because they think it's worth it to get attention for the league and because they want the World Cup and blah, 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 all the reasons that we know about. You know, I don't think that they necessarily think that Jordan Henderson is worth, as a footballer, 700 grand a week. And the suggestion is that is because they won't fucking pay anything to Liverpool. So, but they think he is worth it at the moment to the league to get Jordan Henderson there. But that might not be the case next summer. So they even might have moved on to a different strategy or moved on to different players or the money might just not be there. It wasn't there forever in China. And so, you know, that's what, I'm not saying that's necessarily the case. I'm just saying those are the conversations that players will be having with each other and with his agents and sorts of stuff like that. So it isn't just, I take your point, argument, Rob, but I think it's more than that. It's not just a case of like, oh, we'll wait till next year and I'll cost myself, you know, however million you've just said. It'll feel a little bit now or never to them as well. So, you know, you say push it back, but next summer, you know, there's suddenly no offer anymore. Then I'm 34, if I'm Jordan Henderson, and this rotation role that Andy's just talked about that you've sold me is even less, you know, next year because Lavi has kicked on or sort of whatever it is. So all those things will be going through, you know, his mind at the moment and obviously have pushed him towards making this decision.
I think the ramifications of these deals, if they go through, they're clearly massive, but the scale of it, I think we may not be yet appreciating, because I think we're within a day or two of also hearing, and I'm speculating wildly, that there's a bid for Thiago, and that he's also been offered a king's ransom. And from our point of view, he was the one who I think was the more compelling case for letting him go because of his injury record and the fact that he's out of contract anyway in a year's time, so you wouldn't expect to get a fee for him. But if you, and I don't want to over-egg this, but there is a potential disastrous scenario where we lose our three senior midfielders. And not only is it a lot of work to do in the transfer market, even if we can get three bodies in, and we will come into part two to talk about the type of player we might be able to attract or not, it's just a lot of change. It's revolution. It's not evolution. You know, it's a lot to absorb. It's suddenly a lot of young players in one big part of the pitch. And the planning of this, I don't know, everything Klopp was doing, all his notes are suddenly in the bin. We're on a wing and a prayer. It feels exciting. It feels like a kind of ground zero moment. And there's no manager in the world I'd rather have given this jeopardy, if you like. But it's very nerve-wracking at the moment.
Yeah, I think there is a little bit of that. I think with the manager we've got, I don't think it'll faze him. I think he'll relish the challenge of kind of evolving the team. But you are right to say the amount of change does concern you now. This is why I'm always a fan of, and certainly was last summer, that Liverpool should have been evolving a little bit quicker. Now, don't get me wrong, this situation that's come about this summer is quite unusual, but I do think you could have made a case for kind of looking to move one or two on last summer that we've only done this summer, and a lot of them are going on freeze, and obviously you're having to bring in more lads, which we knew we'd have to do anyway, and you might now be having to bring in even more. So that does create a problem, because there's no doubt about it, even if you're coming from a team within this league, there will be, or there might be, a settling in period. No, this manager will ask different things than other managers, as all managers will do. So you've got to get used to a system. You've got to get used to your teammates. You've got to get used to a way of playing. You've got to get used to representing Liverpool Football Club, because it is different than, say, you know, playing for a team that's slightly down the league. You know, there is expectations that come with pulling on the shirt, that you are supposed to win games every single week. That brings pressure. You don't know some of these unknowns. You know, how do players respond to that? Now, I think the lads we've brought in, certainly in McAllister's case, you know, he's going to win a World Cup. So, you know, he's the kind of fella who you think can handle pressure. He's done it on the very, very biggest stage.
Premier League ready.
Yeah, and he's Premier League ready. But again, you know, it is a shift playing for Brighton to come into Liverpool. But you'd back him to probably hit the ground running. But no, there will be others who join the club, and he'd maybe just not quite sure. And maybe, you know, it takes them 3 months or 6 months to settle in. So if you'd ever had the likes of Fabinho and Henderson and Thiago knocking about, whilst you're not maybe starting all three of them in games of football, you maybe are using them quite a bit over the first maybe 6 to 8 games, and just settling in and bringing others in at different times. So there will be that uncertainty now for Liverpool. But, you know, we have probably got the best man in the business, so certainly one of them, for kind of navigating some of this stuff. So, yeah, it's interesting times. But, Rob, my thing here is, and I said it before, is that they're going to have these targets identified. And does this now allow them to maybe go and get someone slightly, maybe slightly bigger than what we previously thought? So I've heard people mention now, like Casido and stuff like that. I'm not sure Liverpool will still go and put the money down for a player like that. But that is the kind of footballer maybe where you're talking about, could we go and invest in someone who is going to be able to maybe mitigate some of the issues that we could have over suddenly losing three players, which, you know, the Thiago one, I don't think it's quite out there yet, but it certainly seems to be gathering a little bit of pace. So, yeah, interesting.
Well, we're going to go and talk in part two about the Caicedos of this world and the scale of player that Liverpool should be targeting. But before that, we want to play you a clip. John, you did a reaction special yesterday. Ian was on it. Tell us a little bit about it before we play the clip.
Yeah, it was the morning after the night before, if you like. So obviously late at night the story was breaking and everything was happening. And so I sent a few texts out to the A-team. They couldn't make it. So so Ian Ryan can't.
So Josh jumped on.
it's... You know, we had loads go out yesterday. We had, you know, we had journalists, we had experts, we had all these different sorts of type of voices finding out what's going on. But I think we're at our best when our voters and supporters reacting to stuff. And so, yeah, this is a little clip from what we felt about all the madness yesterday morning. Let's look at it from the club's point of view then, Josh. And, you know, Liverpool will be, I think, a little bit surprised by sorts of developments. I do take Harriet's points on board that sometimes, you know, things come out of nowhere and all football clubs have to be prepared for every eventuality, you know, in a way, really. I'm sure there's a document somewhere which is entitled "What if Mo Salah decides to go?" So things like that. So, you know, football clubs, it's their job and stuff like that. They've seen it all over the years. But Liverpool don't have to sell him. And I think that is worth sort of mentioning. And there's a bit of talk where... And there's a bit out there, and I'm sure it's been placed by various people in Saudi that, oh, you know, they're hoping to do a deal quite low in terms of the transfer fee. So the wages are going to be quite high, but they don't think they're going to have to spend loads and because of his age and stuff like that. But he is still Liverpool captain, and he has still got 2 years on his deal. And as I say, the timing, we've been sound on transfers before, but that's been when we've had sort of more preparation time and things like that. So the Sadio Mane one, you know, it feels at the time, maybe not necessarily now, but it feels at the time that Bayern getting relatively on the cheap. But, you know, it's all sort of planned and they're able to point to the Thiago stuff. There's relationships between the clubs and all that. Like, Liverpool don't owe the Saudi League anything. And Liverpool don't have to go, oh, yes, Sam, well, our captain wants to go and earn all this dough and has this new life or whatever. So, yeah, you can have him on the cheap. Like, we can just say, look, this is fucking up our preparations. So you're going to have to pay above market, whatever you think market value is, you're going to have to double that because this is a pain in the ass for us. And I think they've got a right to do that. It's John Gibbons for the Anfield Wrap, a little insert courtesy of Audio Boom. And it is for Manscaped, because Manscaped now has beard products and they are available in your country. They are once again revolutionising men's grooming with the brand new Beard Hedge Pro Kit. From a beard trim to a fresh shave, the technology behind the Beard Hedge Pro Kit allows you to shape your signature beard look like never before. Now you can finally use Manscaped products to make your drapes match your carpet by going to manscaped.com and using the code WRAP for 20% off and free shipping. So that's manscaped.com. Use the code WRAP, W-R-A-P, for 20% off and free shipping. Now, I use Manscaped. They very kindly send me their products, and it very much is top-of-the-range stuff, really easy to use, really smart, and, yeah, I'm a very much a Manscaped satisfied customer. So it's time to take your mane to say goodbye to all your stubble trouble with Manscaped's Beard Hedger Pro Kit. You've got the Beard Hedger. It's a cordless trimmer with a rotary reel that gives you 20 hair cutting lengths with all one guard. It's waterproof, so you can take it in the shower with you. I need to do everything in the shower, you know. Honestly, I'll shave in the shower, I'll brush my teeth in the shower, everything that can get done, you know, in that one place of feeling that warm water on me is great. So that is good news for me. You've got that titanium coated T-blade, and the Pro Kit doesn't end there. They've created four dermatologist tested formulations for your post trim care. There's a beard shampoo and conditioner, there's the beard oil, a beard balm, and then also throwing in free gifts, a beard brush, comb and scissors to ensure your beard is ready to impress. So that is absolutely loaded. What more could your beard possibly need or indeed want? So to get 20% off and free shipping with the code WRAP at manscaped.com, get yourself over there. One stroke, one guard, 20 lengths. Thanks so much for them for supporting us again.
That was John, Ian and the gang. Part two. I want to look at what Liverpool should do next. I want to talk about the stature of target we should look at, and also to sort of look forward and maybe in a positive way and say, is there as much opportunity as dread here? Andy, you know, we were both probably monitoring social media and talking to friends yesterday on WhatsApp groups or whatever, and I was, in fact, our friend Paul Senior was particularly excited by all this, and I'm 80% with him in as much as, you know what, we got halfway through last season, we were getting all, as a fan base, pretty fed up with, is a bit harsh maybe, but we were worried that our old guard had really clearly, well, passed their sell-by date and needed upgrading on. Well, what we wished for is looks like it is coming to pass. They're going and we might get some money for them. Between Henderson and Fabinho, reports that we believe we might pull in 60 million. So this is maybe the start of the bright, new, younger, braver Liverpool dawn that we all wished for. Where are you on the sort of optimism, pessimism meter on it? Is it an exciting time to you, or are you more nervous than excited?
Well, I mean, it only occurred to me that yesterday when I was thinking about it, Madrid was 4 years ago, like four seasons ago.
Yeah.
Like the European Cup. And I don't know whether it's COVID or lockdown, whatever, it doesn't seem like that long ago to me.
No.
But when you think about it, you know, the fact that we still, up until recently, retained so many of that squad is surprising. I don't know. The narrative of it's weird. I think we just said in the break there, if you take the Saudi element, and we'll get to the thing, but if you take the Saudi element out of it, and Bayern Munich come in with £15 million for Jordan Henderson at 33 years old, and you get $200,000 off your books, and you get that extra money, well, frankly, if you're me, you're taking it. As you said, going into the season, at the end of the season, someone comes in and offers $40 million for Fabinho. I mean, feel free to disagree, but I'd be like, all right, yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds 29, his value starts plummeting rapidly. He's not been in the best form. All right, he could regain that form, but $40 million for a 29-year-old who's on the decline, solid. And then what do you do with that? Not only does it free up, not only do you get the money in the transfer kitty itself, but you're freeing up wages. I don't think that people consider that enough. So you look at Henderson, Fabinho probably on collectively $400,000 a week, right? Okay. So you've got that money off your books over the however long their further commitments are, and you've got your transfer kitty. So I think you could be pretty bold with what you were doing. And I've seen the Casado mentioned, and I don't know, because it's like the Solskjaer got it thing. No one knew that we were in for him until it was pretty much done. What I would say is it's strength. If, as alluded to in the first part, it strengthens Liverpool's hand and also frees up space in the squad to accommodate it, so you can go to these players and go, look, we've got this gap on our squad now. So it's not as, we're not just on a project here. We believe in you. We want pretty much near the finished article. So be interesting to see what happens next. But I'm bordering into that dangerous ground of being optimistic.
I think I am too. I think I'm excited by it. At the end of the day, you can only face forwards, and it is what it is. It's not Liverpool's fault, really, that people are offering money, big money, for players who we would want to sell within the next year anyway. It's not our fault, and it isn't really the players' fault.
It's not Mo Salah, is it? It's not like Mo Salah, who's actually taking for the moment.
No, let's not even go there, though. Jesus Christ, you never know what's in the post. But, John, Andy's referenced this. Liverpool can be bolder, I think, than most people realise, in the transfer market this summer, certainly. We've got off the books players who are paid a pretty wage, the James Milners, Firminos, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Keita, and now potentially Fabinho and Henderson. I did a bit of a totting up exercise and thought, that's 1 million, 1.2 million off the wage bill before even talking about bonuses. For the next year?
A week.
Thank you, Andy. A week. 50 or 60 million pounds. Now, obviously, you buy players, you've got to pay them, so some comes off that. But even if you netted around half, because the new lads coming in, I mean, McAllister and, what's his name, Szoboszlai, we're talking maybe 300 grand.
But that's not the transfer fees in either.
Yeah, of course. There's a lot, especially if you look at the amortization of transfer fees over a period of time, you compare that to what you're saving on transfers over 5-year contracts. There's a lot of money potentially in the kitty for Liverpool, even without mega sales here. Let's start crystal ball gazing as much as wish listing. What do you expect Liverpool, if these deals do go through, what do you expect Liverpool to do between now and the end of the transfer window?
I think the aim needs to be to be in a better position without them than you are with. And so that has to be the thing. So Andy was talking before about, you know, us holding the cards and stuff like that. And we are in a strong position on it because of the contracts. And, you know, and so we're able to look at it now, and they'll be having meetings now. And the conversations, I'm sure, will be, well, if we sell these, how confident are we can be in a position where we use that money to be in a better state than if we'd have kept them. And that has to be the sort of challenge, really. And so, because we need to be better than last year, and last year is a factor because, you know, last year is a, you know, it's not a disaster, but it's fairly close. It looked like it was going to be a disaster. They sort of pulled it back, you know, towards the end, but they're out of the Champions League. You know, they didn't really challenge for any trophies, you know, in a meaningful way. You know, there's no finals or even semi-finals, is there? And so we're in the situation where, you know, everything needs to be, so they needed to improve anyway, and then they let a lot go. Yeah, not necessarily, you know, none of them were ones who you gutted about from a sporting point of view. Obviously, there's the emotional connections to the players, you know, some more than others. But I think, you know, they're still footballers who were playing for Liverpool, some of them right up to the end. And so, you know, you'd already sort of take a step backwards from a bad position of having a bad season. And then they've signed two players who look really good. Okay, sound. So you're sort of moving forward. So you're starting to have the argument against, or we were, you know, even with just those two, we're in a better position and having lost sort of 4 or 5 or whatever it is, you know, but these we feel like you can get a bit more. I would argue they were still sort of a little bit off where they needed to be. And I think most people were the same. But then now you're taking two more steps backwards if you sort of let these go. And so I guess what I'm saying is, you know, it's not about, for me, looking at it and saying, well, is this good money for Fabinho in terms of, you know, what we think he's able to contribute, or what is a good price for a 33-year-old Jordan Henderson? For me, it's how confident are they that they can get us with losing those two players into a much better position? And that, for me, has to be replaced by two. And collectively, those two need to be better, or need to be where confidence can give us more than Henderson and Fabinho can next season. And that's obviously always a difficult thing to be sure about, because the only real certainty is around the players you've got rather than the sort of the ones that you bring in. Although even that, you know, with how they've sort of, you know, regressed a little bit, it is tricky, but we need to be better. We needed to be better anyway. And then now, with all these players going, they're making it harder for themselves. And it's become harder for themselves, whether, you know, it's sort of their sort of doing or not. And so they've got to be sure. And if they're not sure, then they need to keep the players for me. So I'm willing to roll the dice and gamble. And I'm willing to say there is a path to Liverpool, to us all getting to August 31st, having played a few games, feeling good about the squad, going, yeah, that was the right thing to move those players on because we did this. But what is the this, and how confident are they that they can do it? On top of the other things that they still need to do, because there was still work to do to that squad, you know, in particular a defender, which is really, really crucial for me, you know, before you're even talking about replacing these two who sort of might be going. And so there is a lot to do, and how they feel they do it, you know. I wonder how much of it, you know, was, you know, they've got a really experienced sporting director in for a reason, haven't they, on a short contract. I just wonder whether they didn't know every storm this summer, but they knew it was going to be a really big one. And they were like, we need someone in here who knows what they're doing. It can't be someone wet behind the ears like Julian Ward was. Apologies to Julian, who I'm sure his ears are perfectly dry. Do you know what I mean? But it wasn't like... it wasn't a summer to be learning on the job, was it? No. It was get a wily fella in who the manager knows, who's able to, you know, he's up against it. Now he was up against it anyway, and he's up against it even more. And I wonder whether they anticipated a little bit of it and thought, yeah, this isn't one to get into this fella who's going to be, you know, maybe be good at this job and do it for sort of 5-10 years. So I wonder, you know, the more I think about the appointments of Schmeichel, whether, you know, how much of this, because he's going to be busy, and there is a way, and I understand why, you know, some people you mentioned there, Paul, you know, some people are sort of optimistic because, you know, there is a path, but it's hard, and they're going to have to work really hard, and they're going to have to get a lot done, and... you know, we're going to need a bit of luck. And also as well, we all need to, those of us who are saying we want to roll the dice, of which I'm increasingly sort of one of them, we need to accept that it might be a bit rubbish for a bit. Like, we talked about it on the transfer video show, which is out now. Like, there's no top clubs have done this before. You know, shipped a whole midfield out and got a whole new one in the summer. So there's a chance that it looks a bit ropey for a while. And if you've asked for this, if you've advocated it, then you need to keep your cool, in my opinion.
Dan?
Just on that, just a quick one question that I have for John, actually. I know this is your show, Rob. It's just really interesting.
It's all about show.
when you said if they
Rob do... Rob just keeps the awards.
Yeah. Quite rightly. when you said if they do Henderson and Fabinho, they need two more, right?
Yeah.
So my line of thinking, and I'm not saying I'm right because I'm more often I'm wrong than I'm right, is that if they've had the conversation with Henderson and gone, we're looking at 25, 30 games for you next season, and they've had a similar conversation with Fabinho.
Yeah.
Do you then buy two with the same kind of thinking, or do you go, right, okay, I'm just going to throw one in, Tchouaméni, for example.
Yeah.
Tchouaméni's suddenly accessible and available, and you're thinking, right, okay, go in 50 games a season, one player. I'm just thinking what we've got in midfield. So assuming we keep hold of Thiago, right? Mm. So you got the two new lads.
Yeah.
Szoboszlai, McAllister, player X, Curtis Jones, who hasn't done bad. Thiago's in there. Mm. Pajetic is there.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I'm not saying you're right and I'm wrong. Harvey Elliott's there. I'm just more like, if...
Is that enough, you're saying?
I'm not understanding what you're right, but you're right about the defence, by the way, but I'm just in that area, just going, right, bang.
It's an argument.
It is an argument, and I think it's an interesting one. The thing is about Tchouaméni is that, you know,
or anyone of that ilk.
There's still sort of a gamble element, really. Yeah. You know, in terms of, you know, bringing them in, and so I'd feel better with two. You know, it's whether you bring in two of a sort of a similar profile, you know, transfer, you know. It's the age old question, isn't it? If you've got 80 million to spend, you get two 40 million players, or you get a 60 out of 20. I think you probably do the 60-20 for me. You know, I'm not you saying those numbers are exact, but do you know what I'm saying?
That's what I'd rather see. 40-40 is the other option, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's what I would.
80-0, 40-40 or 60-20. Yeah, there's three
routes. I'd go 60-20, personally.
I think there's no doubt sometimes you can get away with a little bit less than what you think if you've got robust footballers in there, but there is always the risk that if you just do one and he does something really bad in those first few games, you're a bit fucked and you're a bit concerned and a bit kind of backs against the wall. So I'd like to see two, to be honest. I think, you know, a lot of this will come back down to, just giving yourselves too much to do, because I think Jürgen probably would have said, well, yeah, I'm happy to let one of the kind of the three older ones go because it'll generate maybe a little bit of money and we can evolve and all that kind of stuff. And there's no doubt in my mind, you know, based on what we saw last season, you can upgrade on Henderson and you can upgrade on Fabinho, and it's not that difficult to make that shift because, as we've all said, they're on the decline. I think that's fair to say, but no, they are bringing different things, and experience is important and leadership is important and people do play it down, but it is key. And it just is about, can you do it all in one summer? Because as John said, it's very rare this happens. And I think if you're asking the manager, he's probably saying, well, I don't mind evolving the whole midfield, but I want to do it over a couple of years. And that's where Liverpool have been caught on the hop a little bit. And obviously, this has come out the blue, but you know, this is why people will always say you should be trying to build from a bit of a position of strength. And if you're bringing a project in, you want him to be coming into a team that is building from strength, because you want to be able to ease him in and do little bits. I think Andy's point about Tchouaméni is a good one, because I think if you're looking at players you can come in and solve a multitude of issues, I think it is people like Casado and people like Tchouaméni in terms of the level of footballer. But you do come back to, no, our Liverpool under this ownership group, are they willing to go and put the money down? Because it is going to cost a fair whack to get either of those in, and there'll be competition for them. You know, can you persuade Tchouaméni to leave Real Madrid this soon in his career? He's still got things to prove there. I think Casado will be an interesting one because there's all the big clubs sniffing around them, so you're going to have to act with a fair amount of kind of swiftness and certainty. And Liverpool needs certainty in this market. You know, they're going to have to, and you can't guarantee everything. But where they can, they need to be acting with a fair amount of certainty, because, you know, we are talking about fairly big, uncertain times here. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting how it develops.
I'm interested as to how bold Liverpool will be, because I think, on the one hand, if they say to themselves, do you know what, the money for Fabinho and Henderson, let's call it a combined 60 million, plus getting their wages off the books, is something we would have wanted to do. Right? Albeit we'd have liked to have staggered it over the course of the next 12 months. It is what we wanted to do. And actually, if we'd had to do it next summer, I don't think we'd have got 60 million for them. I think you might have had to virtually give Jordan away, and you probably 20, if they both had sort of underwhelming seasons as they aged and played less and less games, we might have been lucky to get anywhere near half that 60 million. So there's an argument for saying, okay, if we weren't getting them out, if they were just to go fade naturally over the next 2 years, we'd have probably gone for, let's just pick some names here, just to use them as examples. Alavia this summer, and Thuram is ready to leave Nice by next summer. So you've spent a combined 85 million. But now it's different. You've kind of got to bring two midfielders in now, as Ian said, and I think we all more or less agree. But you've also got this extra 60 million in the bank, arguably, right? Well, theoretically. What I'm getting at is I think Liverpool can afford to and have to overpay now, but they can justify it to themselves by saying, you know what? We've got money in we didn't think we were going to get. So what I'm getting at is...
And again, they did that with Carroll.
We did exactly that. Before, that's what in my mind, 100%. So they said with Carroll, we've got 50 million for Torres. Suarez has cost us 20. So we've got up to 30 to go back to the even Stevens situation. And I think they're at the point now is if they're dithering about between with Southampton over about 8 million on Lavia, Southampton go not a penny less than 50, and Liverpool go, oh well, it's 38 plus 4 in add-ons, that's just, or no more, and they were prepared to sort of stare Southampton out for another 3 or 4 weeks. Fuck that. They pay them. Or they go 10 million heavier than they wanted. Caicedo, Chelsea and Brighton dithering over whether he's worth 75 plus add-ons or 85 plus add-ons. Fuck it, we go in bold, 90 or whatever. We hit Brighton's number. I kind of think if we want to take the Henderson Fabinho dough, whether we feel we're forced to or not, but if we want to take that money, we're going to have to pay some premiums to get our side of the job done.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I you know, without sort of looking into the, you know, the exact numbers of it, and you know what is a premium, but I think that there's value as well to, we need these new players in as soon as possible, and so I think, you know, if Henderson's going, I won't be surprised if it's done by maybe the end of today, but if not, sort of Monday, because then, you know, the manager is going to want to work on these players. And like I said before, having a whole new midfield, you know, to work with. You know, I was, even when we were signing players, you know, McAllister coming in, Chabot guy. I was thinking, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me though if the midfield against Chelsea is Fabinho, Henderson, Curtis Jones, was fucking not going to be now. Do you know what I mean? Like, and so you know, unless sort of, you know, Kurt's the only one who sort of, you know, might play if they all move on. And so you're going from the fact that, you know, we had the position if we wanted to ease these lads in. Now they're the ones that. They're going to be showing the other lads around. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I'll show you the canteen. I've been here 3 weeks, and so you know what I mean. It's the situation that, you know, suddenly there's a lot of pressure on Alexis McAllister to, you know, to really sort of come in and grab that chair straight away, which is fine. But I think you take the pressure off by, you know, getting these lads. You know, can we not just get two of them, but can one of them be in Germany? You know, maybe not for the whole thing, because I think they fly out on Saturday. But could he be joining them sort of, you know, halfway through? Can he be out there, not just, you know, playing, not just training, but sort of bonding with the squad? The other one, can we get him so he's ready for sort of Singapore? It's that. Do you know what I mean? It's that. So you're not just getting two in for the two. You're having them for the start of the season, if not starting, at least around, at least here, you know, able to sort of be part of it. You know, we can't sort of sell two and have you know, one at some point of them, and then, you know, one where we're holding firm and it's the 30th of August and we've got 1 point from the first two games. You know, it's that. So when you're talking about being bold, Rob, you know, it's not just the money. I think it's the speed that the manager will want them to act as well.
Well, yes, and I think the money creates, the being bold with the money speeds up the process. Yes. I think I was struggling to get that. But yeah, okay, we're going to go in part three. We're actually just going to dot around the sort of names that are being linked to Liverpool. I mean, we've talked entirely about our midfield overhaul, but Liverpool need a defender. I think all have agreed on it. We know from various reports that Liverpool want a left-sided centre-half. The most exciting but also frustrating link has been to Levi Colwill, a long loan at Brighton last year, a Chelsea player. Chelsea don't want to sell him. Liverpool seem to think they're in with a chance. Harriet had a chat with a Brighton insider about the qualities of Levi Colwill, and we have an insert to give you a preview of that chat.
Hello, it is another transfer special on the Anfield Wrap. I'm Harriet Pryor, and I'm delighted to be joined again by Ryan Adset. Ryan, we spoke only a couple of weeks ago about McAllister. I didn't expect to have you back on so soon about another player, but thank you very much for joining us. Always good to have your insight.
Thank you for having me back on. I mean, this is a better one to come on to because it's not about a player leaving and it could be about a player coming back. So I'm a bit happier this time than talking about our star boy Alexis joining you.
Yeah, well, we are going to talk about Levi Colwill today. I didn't think I said that right at the top. So yeah, the player we are going to be speaking about. First of all, let's get your perspective from a Brighton side of things on it. Yeah. I mean, he obviously was with you guys on loan last season. Is there an element of a bit of kind of surprise that he's not coming? Like, did you want to keep him? What's the situation from a Brighton fan point of view, I suppose?
I think the situation's just the same as it has been. I think it's quite obvious he's, you know, he loves the club. Everyone knows that. Everyone around the club knows that. He's seems like a good guy. And he was fantastic for us last season. Everyone knows the sort of potential Levi's got, particularly on that left side of centre-half. You know, it's such a rare talent to have a left-footed centre-back, which people love to go on about now. And I think, you know, there's no reason why. I don't think there's anything out of the question. Obviously, Chelsea fans are going to completely disagree with me on that, and they're very, very relentless in their Twitter pursuit. But I think, yeah, I think on a different way, I think, you know, if they get Caicedo 100 million, which they're so desperate for, then I could imagine there's a deal still to be done. I don't think anything's finished yet.
Thanks to Harriet for that. Very interesting stuff. Part three, as I said, we're going to go through the names and some of the latest news around them. Let's obviously the place to start is with Levi Colwill. It's a fascinating one, this. He's clearly the coming force and the exciting new young English left back. There's talk that people see him as heir apparent to Virgil van Dijk. I'd be lying if I said I've seen enough about him to know his qualities, but the hype around him is reaching something of a crescendo noise-wise. So he is a player Liverpool are focused on. The fact that Liverpool, I've said this in recent shows, the fact that Liverpool still seem to be hanging on in there gives me some cause for encouragement, despite all logic telling you why on earth would Chelsea let him go?
Yeah, possibly. But we know Chelsea and other English clubs have dealt with each other fairly recently on fairly big players where you may be thinking it wouldn't happen. So maybe it could. And we know Chelsea need to maybe shift a few, but you would have to say from the outside looking in, you can't imagine he'd be one on the list of getting rid of, because, you know, he does look, generational talent gets thrown around a lot at times, but he does look like someone who could potentially be whatever he wants. And I think from the bits I've seen, he does look a very, very good player, but you are only talking about really small kind of sample sizes so far. He does that season alone at Huddersfield, and then he plays for Brighton last season, so he's never played for Chelsea yet, but I think he only makes 17 league appearances for Brighton, so it's not a load to go off, but he is only 20, he's not 21 till February, so you have to say there's loads and loads of potential there, and that's what you're paying for. If you go and get a footballer like that, you are paying for probably what, the next 12, 13, 14 years, and there are signs that he could really step up and hit the levels that we're talking about in terms of Virgil van Dijk, albeit it is very early and lots of things can happen. So, yeah, I think he's one. If you went and got him, that would be quite the statement and quite the signing. There's also a bit of a sell to him, because he'd have to probably accept he's not going to be coming in and maybe being a starter from day one. There'll be, again, settling in period, learning from one or two others. And he does strike me as someone who really wants to get playing time right now, which is part of the reason why maybe he's looking at kind of getting himself out of Chelsea. So that is interesting. I think the other thing is that, and I know we've kind of come off the midfielders, but one of the things Gibbo alluded to before was potential knock-on effects, and that's what does worry me a little bit, because I was going into this window thinking Liverpool have probably got to do at least one defender, but ideally I want them to do two, and that almost feels like it's not going to happen now, because they've got other work to do, and you can only do so much in the summer, because bringing in too many players can also cause problems, and just having the time to get some of these complicated deals over the line is also a thing. So when you look at that back four, you know, it's easy to forget that Nat Phillips started the season last year and none of the lads have changed. It's the same lads, because he starts the season because the lads we've got are very, very injury prone. Liverpool can't be in a situation where they're scratching round for centre-halves, because, again, this has been in the post a little bit, this problem. And we know Virgil's now a little bit older. What is he, 32? And Matip, Gomez and Konate, we've all said it, they've all got these injury problems that have kind of hampered them at different times. So, yes, they've got to do at least one, but I'd have felt a lot more comfortable if Liverpool were bringing two defenders in and moving one or two out who maybe the best days are behind them. But that also feels difficult to do now, given the work you've got to do elsewhere. So when we talk about midfield and stuff like that, and it's exciting stuff, it is to a point, but you've also got to appreciate there could be some real knock-on effects here with other parts of the squad, where Liverpool have almost got to now just cop for the fact that they may have to run a number of defenders where we're not entirely confident that they're all going to be fit and available throughout the course of the season, and then you throw a Europa League campaign into the mix as well. And as I keep saying, someone's got to play those fucking games. Someone will have to start those games of football.
I see echoes of our decision over pulling out of the Bellingham transfer with the Colwell-Liverpool thing. Actually, I'll come to you on this one, Andy. In as much as I think if we're to prize Colwell from Chelsea, it is going to be for a big fee. I don't know what it would be, but I just can't imagine it being much south of 60 million. Mm-hmm. He's so sought after. But given that Liverpool now looks like they'll have work to do in the midfield, and it looks like they'll have to sort of probably go quite deep and hard and expensive for at least one of these two new midfielders we're saying they need, it might make them think, you know what, Colwell's, one, going to cost a lot of money. Two, we're hanging on, not knowing whether we could get him. Why don't we just move for, I'm going to throw in a name we've been linked to a lot and we were linked to again yesterday. Mickey van der Ven, left-sided Wolfsburg centre-back and left-back, very pacey. Spurs had been moving in on him, but the Evening Standard reported yesterday that Spurs fear that Liverpool will hijack their attempts to sign the defender. The question is, do you think Liverpool might be better off lowering their sights expense-wise on a defender to facilitate the greater spending needed in midfield?
I mean, first off, I just don't see the Colwell thing. I don't see it.
I agree, and that's kind of my point.
I do agree that we need more reinforcements in defence. That's without dispute what you're talking. Ian flagged it before. The kids played 17 first-team appearances for Brighton. And he's not playing for Chelsea. If you're paying £70 million or £60 million for a defender, you're putting him straight in, I'm sorry. Especially if you're Liverpool. And I just don't see that. And listen, the kid could grow up to become the best English centre-half, you know, since...
Could be Rio Ferdinand.
Exactly. But I just don't think you could risk that. If they were bringing him in for 10, 15, 20 million and you can give him time to develop, fine, sound. But if they're the figures, the background. To be honest, this smells like his agent trying to get assurances from Chelsea. That's just my reading of the situation. Because he's been linked with them, Spurs as well. Just been reading. And the same goes for...
Colwell or Van Den Ven, you're talking about?
No, Colwell.
Right.
Spurs will hijack Liverpool's £68 million bid. It's great when there's always a price quoted. Who's given them that price? I just don't...
Do you know what that always is? It's someone's got a euro price and then cutely tried to reverse it and it sounds specific.
And Van Den Ven, I mean, look, he hasn't got a massive sample size either. He's played 38 games for Wolfsburg and he's only played, 11 games for the Dutch under-21 side. He hasn't made the senior appearances. So again... And I don't watch enough of the Eredivisie, to be honest, to give an objective opinion. What I would say is the profile of defender that Liverpool need, someone who can play 35 games a season for a kickoff, has got a sample size. I think it was quoted when Liverpool look at players, they look at someone who played 250 first team games. Was that what I imagine? That?
Yeah, that's what Neil Jones said on here. Yeah, that's what they look for. Yeah,
is it like 169 or something. Oh, really?
There was a specific amount.
152 and a half, I think it was.
Yeah.
So you're looking around that profile. Someone who's dependable and, you know, someone you can kind of hang your hat on. Now, you might be looking for the unicorn of defenders then by asking for that. But then we've done that in the past when we bought Virgil van Dijk. So, you know, they don't need a lot. They don't need a lot. The amount of things that I think last year, especially in defence, everything kind of spiraled because the midfield wasn't functioning and that fed into us getting overloaded and blah, blah, blah. We have got good defenders, all right, with some limited injury issues. Can I say, for me, is a good centre-half. Matip, who we thought might go when he's in form, is a good centre-half. Joe, it wasn't so long ago, we were talking about Joe Gomez being a generational talent and all right, injuries and whatnot. You've got the best right-back in the world, I believe, and you've got probably one of the best left-backs in Europe as well, so there's not that much there. So, I guess, if Liverpool signed it, it did sign reinforcement to the back, it'd be someone whose name has not been even mentioned because we just don't see how they fit into the profile of what we would require.
Yeah, other names that have been mentioned in the last week or two, John, have been Gay from Palace, I think. I don't pronounce his name correctly. Ignacio from Sporting, but other sources have ruled him out. But again, Gay has looked at this as a 60 million kind of fee there. Again, I sort of pose a similar question to you, that I posed to Andy, to you. Are the ripples that will, because of the potential sales for Fabinho and Henderson, going to cause us to rethink just how much we can invest in a centre-half because midfield will be seen more as a priority? In as much as replacing Henderson and Fabinho's games requires a certain level of player, whereas we're very much a bit one for the future and cover in how we're looking at defence, I think.
I don't know. I mean, it could go the other way, couldn't it? Because if you're getting quoted Colwell for 60 and you're like, oh, we think he's really, really great, but, you know, can we sort of justify that? And then you manage to completely out of nowhere get 25 million, say, for Jordan Henderson, say they come up with a fee that's sort of closer to what you think the club wants. You know, they might look at that and say, well, that's a bonus 25 million that we didn't think we were getting. So yeah, let's take a risk on this defender that they might not know. If they were looking at sort of midfielders, you know, anyway, you know, there's different ways of looking at it, really. I don't necessarily, they'd see all the midfield money coming in as money, you know, for the sort of midfield. I think they think a bit wider than that. So it might be that they just go, well, this is bonus money that we didn't think we'd get. And, you know, especially if the Fabinho sales they have, they might say, okay, well, let's put that towards what we were looking to spend on midfields anyway and use this money to, you know, to add to what we were looking to spend anyway, sort of on a defender. But we were a little bit unsure because of cash flow or whatever it was. They might look at it sort of that way. I just think with Colwell, they must have had some encouragement. Like they must stop.
Yeah,
and I know in the past, you know, players, you know, agents have used clubs to get sort of better deals or whatever that is. But I think if he wants to sign a better deal, they would have sorted it by now. I think this has gone on longer than being used in a contract thing. I just think he sees Chelsea as a bit of a madhouse and, you know, Boyhood Red, you know, all that sort of stuff. And I just think he thinks that, you know, maybe it's better for him to go and maybe Liverpool's the one that seems keenest. or he's the most keen on. That doesn't say obviously it's going to happen, because there's loads of reasons, not least having to deal with Chelsea, why it won't. But they must have had some encouragement there. And so if they feel like that this fella's not just the best defender for us out there, because I think it's the most specific position for Liverpool. I think it's the hardest to buy for, actually, in terms of what we want from a defender and what sort of out there. And it's no coincidence to me that both Colwell and Gehi have come through sort of similar, academies, at top clubs, because I think, how you learn how to play defence for a club like Chelsea or like City or like Liverpool, it's just completely different to other teams. And so although the 150 games, I think, is sort of a thing, if you played 150 times at centre half for, I don't know, name whoever you want.
Aston Villa.
Yeah, thanks, Andy. I forgot.
Name any team.
None. There's loads, isn't there? Not just in this country. No, they play all around the world. So if you played 150 games for Aston Villa, Tyrone Mings, for example, I think he's quite a good defender. I know he gets maligned and stuff, but Tyrone Mings hasn't learned a thing about how to play centre half for Liverpool, I don't think, and would look mad. And so I think it is a little bit more specific. I think in other areas of the pitch you're able to sort of make allowances a little bit more. And so I think it is difficult. And so I think that's why, they maybe are a little bit more keen to spend a lot on someone who's played, as few games as he has.
Let's circle back and finish off this edition of the award-winning gutter, this free special edition of the award-winning gutter, Ian, by talking about midfielders again. Look, we've speculated wildly that we might see Liverpool getting super bold and going in for a Caicedo or a Tchouaméni if he or they were available. But being realistic, those kind of deals don't just happen. Experience shows us on the hoof. You suddenly, fuck me, we need a £100 million midfielder. We'll just go and get one. They tend to be a year to 2 years or maybe more in the planning. So the likelihood is that Liverpool are going to get someone who feels a bit more like the sort of midfielder they'd have bought back in 2016, 2017, before they had regular Champions League football. Lavia from Southampton, who we've been linked with and rumours are we've agreed terms with, but whom Southampton are hanging out for a bigger fee from, is an obvious name. He's 19. Again, the sample size of games from him is not huge. I think it's likely that Liverpool buy two, but they buy a Lavia and another unknown, inexperienced in Premier League terms, Kefren Turam, Akone. Do you think in reality that's the direction? We'll end up at the end of this summer with two lads who we go, well, you know what, if one of them turns out to be mustard, that ain't the end of the world, and we can work with that.
I'd be massively concerned with that, Robert.
Would you?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's nothing against those two players, but I think if you're analysing them on their own individual merits, they're absolutely fine. But if you're losing all of the experience that we've talked about in kind of part one and part two, and then you're bringing in two young lads, I think, what's he, Turam 22, Lavia is 19, but very little experience. Whilst they're good footballers, you're asking an awful lot for them to come in and kind of impact on the team from day one. I'd be hugely concerned if Liverpool were doing that, to be honest. I think if they're going to have to bring two in, which seems more and more likely, one of them has got to be ready to go. Just has to be ready to go. He has to be able to come in and add immediate value, which is why we're talking about some of the names you've mentioned, which are difficult to do, because we are talking about footballers who are in some cases at the peak of the powers. Certainly Caicedo, I thought he was great. Listen, there's probably more to come from that footballer, but whenever I've seen him, certainly last season, I thought he was brilliant for Brighton. And don't get me wrong, there are maybe still one or two weaknesses there where you think, well, he could improve that, he could improve this. But I think his influence on that team in particular was hugely significant over the course of a season. And he can do little bits for you elsewhere as well. So why I like him is because he can go and fill in at right back, and then that opens up possibilities in different games as well. But yeah, those footballers you've mentioned, I think both of them are good players. And if you maybe saw one of them come in with another one, you'd be quite content. But I think Liverpool are kind of putting all the hopes on two young footballers, and one of them's only got, a relatively small amount of experience in the Premier League, and the other one's never played in the Premier League, you'd be thinking, fucking hell, this is a fair old risk now. So, yeah, there's some big decisions to make, but I think where I land with it is that, yeah, they've got to be doing someone of a fair amount of experience if they're letting all that experience leave through the door.
Last question then, Anne, to you. A bit of a curveball one. This is prompted by a star of this show of yesteryear, Mr. Phil Blundell. He was positing that actually, maybe instead of having to buy two defensive midfielders, which everyone is assuming Liverpool will look to do in selling Fabinho and Henderson, maybe they just get the one in, say Lavia, and the other one they target is an attacking left-sided eight, facilitating Curtis Jones reprising his number six role, starring for the England under-21s at the recent championships. So he's saying Curtis could be like our new signing as a six, and that would facilitate, and his top tip was Eze from Crystal Palace. I mean, you can talk about the name, but what do you think about it as the idea of it as a sort of a thinking outside the box way of looking at this problem?
Well, Phil's fucking mad, isn't he? I mean, let's be honest.
It says that on his bio, apparently.
Yeah.
I'm Phil, I'm fucking mad.
He's also one of the cleverest people. In fact, I'd say he was the cleverest person I know. So Phil's saying that, I'm willing to...
Hell of a shout.
To entertain it, would say is that Curtis Jones is currently, well, finished this season in really good form. He's had a really good tournament, but previous to that, you know, he was one of the more popular whipping boys, shall we say, amongst the fan base. So I think, I like Curtis Jones as a player, I do. But I need to see a little bit more before, you know...
169 you give, games.
Well, what... But we haven't seen that in 169 games of it. What I'm saying is I wouldn't change the whole dynamic of what Liverpool normally do to accommodate Curtis Jones, is what I'm saying. So, no, is the answer, even though I like the theory.
It's fine. You take it up with Phil. Got behind you. Argue with Phil. Phil likes to argue.
I do like Eze, though. I do like Eze.
I like Eze. And I like Phil. And I've liked...
Who would you like more?
I'd rather have Eze in the attacking number eight and Phil as a defensive mid, I think, on balance. I think Phil would like that too. Enough, Phil. I hope you've enjoyed this free special edition of The Gutter in three juicy parts. Thank you to the juicy Ian Ryan, the juicy Andy, and the juicy John. Yeah, subscribe. You really need to be doing that. We're not giving away this quality for free every day of the week. Bye. Sports Social Podcast Network.